This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about emergency medical services in Indiana to find out why the system is increasingly underfunded and what impact that's having on communities around the state. Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett reported on this recently. You can find her feature on sideeffectspublicmedia.org. With us now is Tim Putnam, CEO of Margaret Mary Community Hospital in Batesville and past president of the Indiana Rural Health Association and National Rural Health Association. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you describe the hospital and the community that you're in right now?
Well, we're a community hospital. We have 25 inpatient beds, and I have to say 25 inpatient licensed beds. Of course, during the pandemic, that's had to expand to more than that, to 40 at times. But on a regular basis, that's what our inpatient capability is. We're in a town of 7,000 people and serve really two to three different counties in a large geographic area.
Is the number of beds not enough for a size of that population?
No, on a regular basis it is, but unfortunately for the last year and a half or so, we've been in a pandemic and we're in a surge at this point in time, and we've surged up in the past. And when you do that, you've got to be able to expand your capabilities, flex to what the community needs. I mean, at the end of the day, our mission is to serve the health needs of this community, and we have to do it however we best can.
How would you compare your hospital and community to other hospitals around Indiana?
Around Indiana and the nation, there are really 2,000 rural hospitals. 1,300 of them are 25-bed hospitals like ours that are critical to the areas they serve. So we're a little bit larger than most, have a very strong outpatient presence, but inpatient-wise, our capabilities are very similar.
Well, when we talk about emergency medical services, what does that exactly entail?
Well, emergency medical services, from our standpoint, has a couple of key features. One is the 911 response. So how to get to people when they have an issue out in the community, and how quickly and how effectively we can get with the paramedics and EMTs in the area. We work with several local 911 services. The challenge that a lot of community hospitals have is the ability, when they bring that critical patient in, we stabilize them and determine they need a level of care that we cannot provide locally. They need neurosurgical care or cardiac services that we don't provide. So now we've got a critical patient that needs to go to a level one trauma center or a cardiac cath lab or a cardiovascular surgery program. And it's getting that patient to another hospital that is no longer a 911 service, but is really critical for that patient, that's become difficult.
And what is the issues facing your area right now? I mean, obviously the pandemic has taken up so many resources. Are there not enough folks in these positions to be able to, for example, take 911 calls or do paramedic work?
I think what we're seeing in the state really is a lack of the number of people filling the positions, given the low pay that they receive. I mean, over the last several years, we've really seen an advancement in the capabilities that EMTs and paramedics can provide patient care out in the field and what they can do, but they're still billed as a transport primary service. So that limits their reimbursement and limits what so many services can pay their EMTs and paramedics. Every year they're required to do a lot of training and they're capable of more things, yet their pay remains low.
What is the pay like?
I believe when Carter did her report that the average in the state was $16 an hour, and around different areas, different volunteer services, it can be much lower for EMTs, a little bit higher for paramedics.
Would you say that this creates also any kind of turnover in the field? Do some folks just not stay with it long-term because of the pay?
And it really does. And that's difficult for us to see because you see dedicated and committed people that want to provide a 911 service. They want to be there for their friends and neighbors, especially in a rural area, because you have to realize someone calls 911, you're making that EMS run on someone you know likely. And a lot of people see a lot of value in that. But when you just cannot earn enough to provide for your family and provide for yourself, it's difficult to stay in the profession. And I've seen a lot of dedicated people that have been in the profession, outstanding at what they do and provide life-saving care, just cannot afford to stay in the field.
And how much do you think the pandemic has opened up this conversation in general about the pay being so low and just the amount of work that folks have to do in emergency medical services?
Well, I think it's added to the complexity. I think it's added to the number of runs. What we see, the record number of runs last year for 911, it's always a dangerous job. I mean, one of the first things you do as an EMT is determine whether your scene is safe, whether you're going into a safe environment or not. Contagious diseases, accidents on the highway make it less safe. It's a lot to ask of people for such a low wage.
Well, when we talk about shortages, is that something you're facing right now?
We don't operate the EMS service. We work with local EMS agencies, and it has been difficult for them. We talked to them about what the turnover is like, because you get someone in the position and they're very good at it and they're dedicated. You want to keep that person for years, but unfortunately they use EMS for just a short period of time and then they're moving on to another position, another career. You can't get the longevity. So yeah, there's turnover in the profession. And a lot of people that would be dedicated and have long careers just cannot do it.
What is the effect of these systems having shortages have on the work that you do?
When you have a complex patient that's in your emergency department, you've done everything you can to stabilize them, but they know they need to go someplace else. Many hospitals, they'll wait for hours in the emergency department for an ambulance to be available to be able to transport them someplace else. And that's a very long time. You can imagine from a patient's perspective and from our team's perspective, they know they need to go to an advanced level of care. And the minutes just tick by like hours as you're waiting for that ability to be transferred someplace else. So it's complex work that needs to be done. It's difficult for the patients to wait, for the families to wait for that period of time to where they get the level of care. And it's hard on our staff. So it's not a coordinated effort right now. To many places in the state and nation to be able to get these critical patients to where they need to go. The pandemic makes it even worse because now we've got a shortage of critical care beds in the state. So getting those placed and getting the highest priority patients where they need to go is more difficult than it is on a regular basis.
And when you talk about, like, for example, these ambulances that would be used to transport patients, just to clarify for myself here, Are these ambulances part of an EMS system that you work with, or are they, do they belong to the hospital?
No, they're part of an EMS system that we work with. A local EMS and fire service stations one of their ambulances at our hospital. We're lucky to be able to have people willing to do that, and we help them subsidize that cost because it's really the cost of readiness that we have to pay for. Many hospitals don't have that luxury of having a local ambulance service willing to do that. Transports are difficult. Many times it requires a paramedic. You cannot be a basic EMT and do many of the transports we do here. So it requires that advanced level of training that a paramedic provides to get complex patients where they need to go.
Are there any challenges that rural hospital communities face that others might not have to deal with? Obviously, you're talking about some of the transportation and even some of the level one care that you have to send patients out to. But is there anything else you think people don't understand about rural community hospitals?
That would be a question for a dissertation. there's a lot that goes on here. There's a lot of amazing care. And really, I think what we've done and what you've seen with EMS is coordinate that work with other hospitals. I mean, we have to be pretty self-aware of what we can do and what we can't do, but we want our ER to be just like coming into an ER at a level one trauma center or a cardiac services center, someplace with neurosurgical. We want to be that first stop that people have to be able to get the same level of care, so the continuity continues in the transfer and when they arrive at the medical center, so that the medical centers we're transferring to don't have to redo all of our work. So how do we stay on that? I joke many times that people talk about a U.S. healthcare system like there is one, and there really isn't. But no lack of good people doing good work. And that's what we really have out there. But we have to build that system sometimes every day with the resources we have. We'd like to build it where it stays built. But many times we get in these dynamic environments with a pandemic and other resource limitations that cause us to rebuild it pretty regularly.
I mean, that's got to be exhausting to have to keep sort of reinventing the wheel.
It really is. I mean, we'll have a critical patient, and now we've got to figure out the best hospital for that patient to go to, which could be one of any 6-7 different hospitals. Which hospital will accept it? How can we get them safely there? Which transport service do we need to use? Do we need to use aircraft and rotor service to be able to transfer the patient? Is it an infant that we need to deal with and it requires a different level of care than regular transfers? So it's complex, and I'm just amazed by the people that do this work from our ER standpoint, from the tertiary hospitals that receive them, and the transfer team and the EMS squads.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, are there any sort of policies or regulations that you think could be passed in Indiana that would help create a more system that works?
Yeah, I do. I think there are some things that we can realize that we have to build a system. I think that we look at trauma, cardiac, stroke, and other complex medical issues all as important. And really, how do we tie that into our 911 service? How do we reimburse ambulance services for the work they do? I mean, they're paid based on what we refer to as loaded miles, or how far they transfer a patient or transport that patient to the hospital. But honestly, they do such good work and are capable of so much more out in the field and during the transport, and they're just not fairly reimbursed for that. So I think it's that. I think it's understanding that 911 call from a patient is very important out in the field, but that critical patient I have in my emergency department that needs to go someplace else, that needs to go to a St. Vincent's or needs to go to an IU facility, has a level of importance also. And how do we coordinate what available resources we are, so we're not deciding whether to take the only ambulance in a county out of service to be able to do a transfer. So I think there's some good discussions going on in the state right now. And I think, you know, again, I work, some of the best people I've ever worked with are in healthcare working to solve these problems. And I think you're going to hear from Dr. Michael Kaufman here in a few minutes that has all the answers to this.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Tim Putnam is CEO of Margaret Mary Community Hospital in Batesville and past president of the Indiana Rural Health Association and National Rural Health Association. We'll be back after a quick break. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking about the current state of emergency medical services to find out why many are sounding the alarm that ambulance systems and the paramedics and technicians who make them run are in desperate need of more resources. With us now is Dr. Michael Kaufman, EMS Medical Director for the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Welcome to the program, Dr. Kaufman.
Good afternoon, Miriam.
We've been talking about EMS in rural communities and issues around transferring patients to other facilities. What is the scale of this problem in Indiana?
Well, thank you for shedding some light on the topic. But, you know, first and foremost, let me just say that when someone calls 911, I can assure you that EMS will be there to respond. But having said that, we continue to see our annual run numbers increase, so more and more patients needing assistance, yet our number of personnel across the state continue to decline year after year, meaning that we have fewer personnel and fewer number of ambulances. That just makes it harder to respond to all the calls that we get.
And this is happening across the whole state, or are there certain areas within Indiana that are seeing this more?
Yeah, this is a problem that we're seeing across the entire country. I think we're feeling it here at home in Indiana, obviously, and even more so in recent months, even year because of the pandemic. But you don't have to look very far to see that this is a problem that's occurring everywhere. Even just, I believe it was in the last couple of days, we saw our neighbors to the north in Michigan reporting similar concerns, and really it's happening in every state across the country.
You mentioned, you know, if you do call 911, someone will respond and come out. But what I'm wondering is, I've seen, you know, in some other states where they're telling people not to call 911 because they have so many COVID patients coming in.
Yeah, that's right. It was just recently, you know, we're hearing all over the country, particularly in areas that are being hard hit from the pandemic, Tennessee, Florida, because there are so many calls being made to 911 that ambulances are facing very long times, even once they get to the hospital. So there might not only be a delay in the time it takes for someone to reach you when you call 911, but once you get to the hospital with that patient, we're seeing in other states, it sometimes take as long as 3 to 4 hours just to be unloaded from the ambulance and placed in a bed in the emergency department. Fortunately, here in Indiana, even though we are seeing just incredibly high volumes in our emergency departments, our ambulances are getting addressed. Those patients are getting care when they arrive to the hospital.
Is there an increase in 911 calls happening right now?
Yeah, there is. I think that we're 17 days into August, and in our most populated areas, we are seeing record-breaking 24-hour periods where we've just seen more numbers in a 24-hour period than ever before. You only have to go back a couple years where our system in Indiana responded to about 700,000 calls for assistance. Just last year, we were just under 1.1 million, and we're on track to exceed that here in 2021.
Wow. And this is, I'm going to guess, primarily due to the pandemic. Has that caused an increase, or are there other things going on?
Yeah, I think it is in terms of the number of calls for sure. Not only are we seeing folks who have delayed their care, and so maybe their acute medical conditions are now presenting acutely or more frequently, but we're also seeing an increase in the number of patients that need transferred between hospitals or between healthcare systems, as you heard Dr. Putnam mention in his segment just a bit ago.
Well, when it comes to the EMS workers and just overall the whole system, where it seems like there's more calls coming in, there's more resources needed, but there aren't necessarily enough people in those positions to get that work done. Do you think part of it is the pay? We kind of talked about that in the earlier segment, that they're not paid as well as people might think.
Absolutely. I think that leads to a lot of retention issues and recruitment issues in our profession. So just for a little bit more insight into that, I think we have to go back to looking how EMS evolved, and it's evolved almost independently in just about every state. Our EMS system started probably more than 50 years ago. And at that time, it was really just about moving patients very quickly from the scene of an accident to a hospital. Well, over the next 50 years, the care that our EMTs and paramedics are delivering, it's just really growing several fold, right? We're now doing advanced cardiac monitoring, invasive procedures, starting IVs, giving life-saving medications. Yet the reimbursement mechanisms for our EMS provider agencies to receive compensation for the care that they deliver, it hasn't kept pace. So in that regard, EMS is still regarded as a transportation benefit rather than a healthcare benefit. And so their reimbursement is based on the number of miles that a patient has driven rather than the actual care that's delivered. Well, the care to deliver that, the cost to deliver that care has gone up. An ambulance might cost $350,000. A cardiac monitor might be $50,000. The cost of medications. So because of that, our EMS provider agencies haven't been able to keep pace with wages. So it's easier now for a skilled EMS provider to go out and get an unskilled job working in perhaps the food service industry or in a factory or a warehouse. And that's one of the problems with retaining and recruiting new personnel to the profession.
Right. I mean, why would someone want to stick around if they can't make a living wage? How much should these employees be paid? I feel like there should be some discussion on what is considered a fair wage in this position.
I think that's going to be dependent upon a lot of different factors, such as the level of certification, the need in a given area. Some of it's going to be dependent on the scope. We see various scopes of practice that are implemented in areas. But either way, they're just grossly underpaid at the current time.
Mm-hmm. And what is stopping these wages from going up, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, again, I think there's several different variables that go into that. We've really kind of talked about the cost of delivering EMS care has mm-hmm. gone up dramatically. The reimbursement rates perhaps haven't kept pace with that level of care. The fact that EMS is still paid on a per mile transported rather than healthcare services delivered, I think all of that it really kind of factors into what the current rates are and what they need to be.
Well, if you're listening live and you have a question or a comment, you can reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Dr. Michael Kaufman, EMS Medical Director for the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Dr. Kaufman, when we talk about the staffing problems, and part of it is the wages, is there anything else that leads to EMS systems being understaffed? Are there just not enough people going into this field, or is it part of this the great resignation during the pandemic where folks are just finding other jobs?
I think all of the above. So I think that we've not only seen some of our professionals leave the industry for other jobs that perhaps pay better. But at the same time, we're seeing our workforce diluted in that we are seeing new jobs created for our currently licensed and certified professionals. So we know that our hospitals are facing a shortage right now of nurses. So in order to extend the reach of a nurse, we've seen some healthcare systems reach out to and start employing EMS professionals, so that before a nurse might have been able to care for three patients, and now she or he might be able to care for four patients when paired with, or five patients when paired with an EMT or paramedic to help act as an extra set of eyes, an extra set of hands. You know, these professionals go to school for sometimes as long as 18 months or more and know how to do a lot of these medical procedures, such as EKGs, starting IVs, and G-tubes, and other things that these patients need that take up a lot of time. So I think that's also contributed to the shortage. We've actually done pretty well in terms of maintaining our workforce from a readiness perspective in terms of getting ill, being quarantined, or being placed on leave. So, we're fully operational now. We're still able to respond to 911 calls, but we are starting to see it take longer to get calls and respond to hospitals for interfacility transfers.
And can you paint sort of a picture for us, like what would happen if the staffing continued to be understaffed? Like if more people are either leaving the profession or there's a higher demand for services, what would that look like?
Well, the number of calls is continuing to go up year after year, and our number of certified and licensed personnel are continuing to decline. And that's impacting the number of ambulances that are currently available. If we look back about 2 years, we had roughly over 2,000 ambulances ready to respond for calls. Currently, we're at about 1,790 ambulances. So we've seen about an 11% decrease over that same time period. If we continue to see those numbers decline, then it's going to likely mean longer response times and longer wait times. So in other words, when you call 911, it may take longer for a trained provider to reach you at either the scene of an accident or in your home or place of business or wherever that 911 call is made. But then I think the other thing that we have to realize that we are seeing in some degree now is it's going to take longer to transfer you from one hospital to a higher level of care, right? So our entire healthcare system in this country has been built on this kind of spoke and hub model where we have critical access hospitals and they can provide wonderful care, but they may not have the full scope of resources that you need. For example, if your medical condition requires you to have a heart catheterization or your trauma injuries require you to be cared for at a level one trauma center. That's right now, I think, is that in particular is what our healthcare system is feeling right now. And of course, you heard from Dr. Putnam out at Margaret Mary Hospital, who I know has had to wait several hours at times to get his patients transferred to a higher level of care. I think that's the impact that we see in a declining workforce.
Do you think you could ever get to a point where it's faster to just take your own car and transport yourself or a family member in need of medical help?
I think that's very problematic for several reasons. I mean, certainly there are medical conditions that would allow that to happen, but there are many, especially when we talk about these high acuity, these patients with life-threatening injuries that are being transferred from one healthcare system to another. They need advanced cardiac monitoring. They need their intravenous medications and things. Otherwise, I think we really would start to see a significant increase in morbidity and mortality or worse outcomes for our patients.
Well, when it comes to the staffing issues, we mentioned pay and also probably finding other positions or moving up into other positions. Is there anything that you think could be the solution to retaining folks in EMS?
I think there are, clearly there are. I think some of this is that we need to take a look at our EMS system as a whole, not just here in Indiana, but really across the entire country. And we need to see what value we place on that immediate access 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 911 call gets you a highly trained provider to your home, generally within 5 to 6 minutes, right? So to do that, we need to look at who's responsible for providing 911 service. Is that a city, a town, a township, a county? Believe it or not, there are only 11 states across the country that have defined EMS as an essential service. And while we've done that, our statute here in Indiana defines EMS as being essential, it's not clear who's ultimately responsible for providing that, either administratively or fiscally. Now, that does give us some degree of flexibility, but it also leaves several areas of our states dramatically understaffed.
Are there any kinds of policies or regulations in Indiana right now that could have a more positive effect for EMS, or is that something that needs to be worked on?
I think it's a work in progress and one that we've continued to try to focus on from a regulatory and administrative oversight agency. I'm very enthused at a recent summer study session that was held by our state legislature that looked at our state's trauma system. You know, as you know, EMS plays a significant role in responding to the scene of accident, caring for patients, getting them to the right level of care. And we're currently in the middle of that. They're concluding that, and we'll hopefully come back with some very positive recommendations on ways to improve not just the trauma side of our care, but as you heard earlier, all of our time-critical diagnoses or emergencies. That would include heart attack, stroke, trauma, sepsis, and anything else that is time-critical.
I really appreciate this conversation. I mean, I'm going to walk away with a new view on things because I think we've taken... Excuse the train behind me. We've taken emergency medical services maybe for granted, or we just assume that there's always going to be an ambulance ready in case we need it in an emergency. But at times when there's understaffing or there's a lot of other things happening, we need to pay attention.
That's absolutely right. Our EMS system is the safety net. It is always there when someone becomes sick or injured and calls 911. You know, if you compare this to the size of, for example, our fire service, EMS calls for assistance outnumber calls for fires 19 to 1, according to recent NFPA data. That's the National Fire Protection Agency. So, and I'm thankful to our fire industry for really helping to fill that need. Quite a few of our EMS services around our state are fulfilled by the local fire service. So continuing to work with those agencies, continuing to build our relationships with both public as well as the private side of our EMS industry, the hospital provider agency side of our EMS industry, it's all going to be important. Everyone has an equal and important role in our EMS system and keeping that system operational so that we can respond at a moment's notice.
Are there any systems in other states or even other countries that you could look to as an example of doing things really well?
There are some model systems, but again, you know, EMS has evolved independently in just about every state across our country. And even in Indiana, you can look to 92 different counties and find EMS done differently 92 different ways. But if we look at best practices and models that have proven to be successful, there are some other states, Michigan, Maryland, just to name a few, that have taken more of a regionalized approach to their EMS service and have been quite successful in continuing to deliver service while at the same time start to roll out new programs like mobile integrated healthcare and community paramedicine, all which focus on keeping people healthy and improving their chronic conditions so that they don't get sick and have to call 911.
What's your experience been like this past year and a half? Have you noticed differences in the way things have been done? Are things getting, are there new ways to do things quicker than in the past?
Well, as you know, the last year and a half has been really challenging, and it's forced our EMS system to be very creative and come up with new solutions. One of the things that you've seen all over the country has been, you know, historically when you call 911, EMS shows up and they take you to a hospital, regardless of how acute or how minor your actual condition might be. But one of the things that we've seen EMS agencies and programs across the country have to adapt to is helping to, or at least better being able to identify who's sick and who's not sick. as EMS calls have just skyrocketed, particularly during the peaks of the pandemics, many EMS agencies have had to institute evaluate, treat, and no transport policies just to triage those that really actually needed to go to the hospital. There's been some other great programs as well. For example, here in Indiana, we really led the way in what we called our Homebound Hoosier program, where we used EMS providers to go into people's homes and deliver vaccines to those who are not able to get themselves to a vaccination clinic around the state. So I think it's just coming up with unique and alternate care delivery models like those that it has allowed EMS to continue to be successful even throughout the last year and a half of the pandemic.
Well, I thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. It's been a great conversation. Dr. Michael Kaufman is the EMS Medical Director for the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about emergency medical services in Indiana facing shortages at the same time that they are facing increased demand and what impact it's having on Hoosiers. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. Back now to our discussion on emergency medical services in Indiana and why many are warning that ambulances and emergency workers across the state are increasingly underfunded while also facing a growing demand. We're joined now by two guests from the Indiana Emergency Medical Services Association, Executive Director Gary Miller and President Nate Metz. Welcome to you both. Gary, we'll start with you. We've been talking on this program about a lot of the issues around EMS, particularly that the system is underfunded and understaffed and all of those consequences. What is your main concern or concerns right now when you look at everything happening?
Well, obviously the shortage of paramedics and EMTs is by far at a critical stage, and we really need to take some action on that. In order to do that, it seems like money is behind a lot of solutions, and there is a very difficult areas in getting proper funding. In particular, Medicaid in the state of Indiana is paying ambulance providers the same rate as they did in 1976. For numerous reasons, it's never gone up. Also, some of our large insurance providers have dramatically cut the reimbursement rate for ambulance services. So I think it's a double whammy with the funding, which obviously creates the lack of ability for ambulance services to pay more, which of course affects their staffing and the ability to hire paramedics and EMTs.
So I have to go back and ask you about this. The same rate as what was paid in 1976.
Yes, and we've been trying for years to get that increased. But one of the problems is Medicaid primarily looks at access to care is one of their prime motivations when they decide to raise rates. For example, dentists, if all of a sudden they find a lot of dentists are not taking patients because Medicaid patients because their rates are so low, they can just refuse to take patients. EMS does not fall into that situation. It's by law. We have to respond to every call we get, regardless of their ability to pay. And so because we have a duty to pay, Medicaid knows that these patients are being transported, which is, I think, one of the reasons why we fall below their radar when it comes to increasing their reimbursement rates for us.
And Nate, what about you? What are you seeing as the most immediate problems that need to be addressed in Indiana?
Well, I mean, I'd have to agree. I mean, the acute issue right now is being able to find professionally trained staff to fill ambulances. That's the biggest issue our organization faces. That's the biggest issue that a lot of the organizations around me face. And that's what we're seeing. And whether those individuals are leaving the field because they're burned out or they have better opportunities to take care of their families, that's part of the issue. And then recruitment is part of the issue. Training and getting individuals through the programs is part of an issue. There's far fewer educational programs in the state of Indiana now than there were several years ago to train these individuals to become EMTs and paramedics. And that's by far the biggest issue that we're facing right now. That's the fire in the room that needs to be put out. Will fixing that issue right offhand be a sustainable answer? No, I don't think it will be, not unless there's some significant overhauling to the reimbursement system and the financial incentives that come along with an antiquated EMS system that we've been living with for some years now.
Do you think that the pandemic, I mean, I know I'm asking everyone the same question, but did that highlight sort of these disparities in the system? I mean, I just can't wrap my head around, like, the payments are the same from 1976 for some of these things. Would this not have been brought to light as it has currently if we weren't in a pandemic?
Well, I think, you know, necessity is the biggest motivator, right? We have a tendency to only react to crisis. This was on the radar for many, many years. As Gary mentioned, we've been going to the state house and the courthouse and raising this alarm for many years now. We saw the trends. We knew it was going this direction. The pandemic, I think, accelerated it faster than what we expected. You know, and so it's not all on the pandemic. I just think it accelerated and exacerbated the issue to the point to where it's a crisis. And now we are getting people to pay attention.
So it's almost like you've been warning about this potential happening for years, and now it's happening.
Yes, that's correct.
If you have any questions or comments for our guests, you can always send them to us via Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. Or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Gary, how does funding generally work for EMS?
As the other two speakers mentioned earlier, Dr. Kaufman and Dr. Putnam, we get paid a base rate and then a rate paid per loaded miles of the service if we transport the patients. We've seen a little bit of relief thanks to Dr. Kaufman's efforts working with Medicaid earlier this year during the pandemic to give us a little bit of relief in that area. But still, Medicare and the majority of the providers still pay just a base rate based on the level of care that's being provided, basic life support compared to advanced life support, and then a little bit on the transport per mile. So it's primarily considered a transportation service rather than a medical treatment service, which is by far one of the real areas we want to concentrate on getting that changed by the payers. I do want to throw one other thing in here too, is some of the insurance companies want to force providers to become in-network, if you will. And that really doesn't work on ground ambulance transportation. And so that is kind of what's leading to a lot of surprise billing for ambulance patients who receive care because providers have to shift their costs to the individuals rather than relying on the low amount that the insurance companies are paying.
Well, we have a listener comment from Wendell who says he works as a paramedic and says the pandemic shortage in Indianapolis is a crisis. Wendell says this has led to neighboring counties sending workers in to help and that they can't wait for long-term solutions. What kinds of short-term solutions are there for workers like Wendell? I don't know who wants to take that, Nate.
Well, I think the pause was appropriate, right? It's very difficult to come up with an immediate quick fix solution. And I feel for the paramedic because I see it in my staff every day. I think it was Dr. Putnam and Dr. Kaufman both mentioned that the individuals who have worked in this field traditionally over the you know, last several decades and probably since it started, they are very, very much motivated by a passion to help other people. And what you've seen over the years is, and I like to reference it to a trauma metaphor. Whenever we're taking care of children and traumas, we always say that as a provider, we have to look out for a very quick decompensation of that patient. In other words, they manage to keep themselves in a normal condition, and then all of a sudden it drops out from underneath of them. Well, all of these paramedic providers have been essentially keeping the entire system, the weight of the whole system, the broken system,
on their shoulders for decades now. And after the pandemic, they're tired. Their families are suffering. Their mental health is suffering. They're succumbing to mental health and even in some cases, substance use disorders and post-traumatic stress disorders. So they're tired and they do need relief right now. And I wish I had an answer for them. We've got to try to find independent solutions, work with the EMS Commission to allow us to try to find new creative ways to service our clients and our patients who are in need. And we really need a lot of patience from our community and a lot of support from our community. I don't know if I have an answer for you as far as a quick solution for tomorrow, because even trying to get new providers into the field, it takes a minimum of 3 to 6 months to get an EMT, and it could take 18 months to get a new paramedic. So even trying to get new people into the field, we're talking a year from now before we could get new people in. Perhaps we could put enough money and an influx of cash to try to attract some of the providers who have left the field for non-skilled positions. That might be a good solution, but I can tell you that the paramedics and the EMTs who are in the field right now, they're tired. And if we don't provide them relief, the problem is going to continue to get worse, because now instead of people leaving for that better pay, they're going to be leaving because it's less stressful and they know that their bodies can't take it or their minds can't take it if they keep pushing themselves to the levels that they're pushing themselves each day, and they're doing it in the name of their communities. But I wish I had an answer for you for a quick solution. I think locally is probably our best answer for that.
Well, on that note, Gary, we have a question from Lance on Facebook who asks, is there anything a non-licensed person can do to help the EMT service?
I think one thing that we're finding more and more is that ambulance services in general are trying to hire usually you want to be an EMT before you ride in the ambulance, and by law, to ride in the back of the ambulance, you need to become an EMT. But a lot of non-licensed ambulance services are hiring ambulance drivers, if you will, which would be non-certified personnel who's, even though they're caring for the patient, they still rely on the EMT. So that's about the only option I see, is that to be able to become a driver position rather than the tech in the back of the ambulance.
So is there anything like fire departments that have volunteer firefighters? There's nothing like a volunteer EMT?
There are. Throughout the state, there's several. And those areas that rely on volunteers in particular are extremely grateful for the volunteer services, because it really is filling a much needed need, basically. And so there are volunteer services, and you would have to contact your local volunteer service to see if they would be willing to take on non-certified personnel.
Are you seeing, Nate, at all that more folks are interested in this field of work, or does it seem like people are leaving more than they're joining?
Well, I think the numbers show that we're losing providers quicker than we're bringing them in. I do think that there is perhaps an interest in exploring emergency medical services, and I'm only speaking from experience with my own application processes. With individuals looking for work right now, I think if we could target the appropriate individuals or demographic of individuals, whether that be age or area or current position in life, we might be able to recruit people more to come in. But again, finding an EMT program for them to go through, finding a way to pay for that EMT program for that individual so that they don't have to put the money up themselves, finding a way to pay for their time in class so that way they're not trying to split between making a living for their family and also going to school. I think all of those things would have to be necessary for us to capitalize on what I see as an increased workforce who are looking for career changes that exist right now.
And if I may add, the one thing that I believe all four of us guests today have made ambulance trips ourselves and worked as EMTs or paramedics. And it is a highly rewarding job. The ability to help other people is just very rewarding, the ability to really make a difference in people's lives is something I think everybody hopes for in a career. Unfortunately, when they, you know, go home at the end of the day and they can't pay their bills, I think that's what really is forcing a lot of them to look to different careers.
We have a listener voicemail from Michael who says he's a former EMT with suggestions on what Indiana could do better. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Michael. I'm calling from Evansville and former EMT back in 86. And one of the things I think that Indiana could do a better job on is emergency medical dispatch, which allows callers to speak to a qualified dispatcher. Far too many of the 92 counties in Indiana do not provide that because they're run by law enforcement who refuses to do that. As a way of information, not only was I an EMT, I was also a Indiana EMS commissioner appointed by the governor for three different terms. So thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think Dr. Kaufman addressed this slightly in that what you're trying to do is you're trying to match up the need for what the calls are coming in as and what vehicles you're going to send. What Michael was alluding to in the telephone call was that at dispatch, some high functioning dispatch centers are able to weed out trips that somebody may be calling, and instead of sending an ambulance out to see what the issue is, they may be able to set them up with something not as critical, perhaps a doctor's appointment later on, or perhaps a non-emergency ambulance responding maybe in an hour from now rather than immediately. And that is the dispatch centers. I see some dispatch centers that really use that, and it does help with the workload and the functionality of the service.
Yeah, that does sound like a one solution possibility. Before we wrap up here, we have about a minute and a half left. I was wondering, is there another solution, maybe using medical students to participate in this as part of their training or something?
Yeah, so I mean, we engage with a couple of universities and we do a lot of ride-alongs with medical students, even individuals who are in school to become an MD. Right now, the rules that manage EMS would not allow us to rely on those individuals as an asset for our communities alone without also already having the preset number of assets that are warranted to be on an ambulance. So while that is a solution that a lot of different communities use, particularly like in homeless shelters and places like that to help extend access to care, right now the rules and regs would not allow us to rely on those resources alone.
So it sounds like there's still a lot of conversations and processes to work through in the coming years.
That's probably an understatement, but yes.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. Gary Miller is Executive Director of the Indiana Emergency Medical Services Association, and Nate Metz is President of the group. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our Managing Editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.